You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. And we can also be heard on the web live. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and I am Sita. Sometimes I forget my own name. But anyways, we have an action-packed show today. We have a young woman that I met a couple years ago. Her name is Bob Bland. And she was one of the four national co-chairs of the 2017 Women's March in Washington, D.C. She will be calling in from New York. On January 21st, 2017, the Women's March in Washington was a historic woman-led demonstration with over 5 million people marching worldwide. And my daughters and I, were so grateful that we were able to get the time off and attend. And our in-studio guest is Andrew McDonald.
You almost did it again.
He's an author. He's an author, and he's going to be talking about his book. And the book is called, for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, it's called Punishment and Good Deeds. What a fitting title for today's world.
It is. Totally fitting.
And he brought his lovely wife with him, which I think we're going to do Emily. A show with her one day. Emily yes. told us about her job, and it sounds fascinating. Yes. When people are flying in aircrafts, they need to think about the people who have made that possible. Emily's one of those people.
Yay.
Yeah, I love it. And Ellen, of course, is here. So, Ellen, maybe you could give our listeners the website and how to listen online.
Yeah, so if you go online and you're listening right now, you should be online. It's AM 1510 or 1510WWBC.com, and you just hit that on-demand button. And also, on our website, you'll be able to tune in at a later date. You can download it right from our website under on-demand shows.
Yeah.
So
Downloads, how many downloads did we have?
There were 1,800 downloads last week, which was pretty incredible, just right from the station, right from our website. And of course, today's show is going to be one of those types of shows, too. And hopefully a lot of people will buy some books and get involved.
Yeah, we need more people to start reading again.
Yes.
I mean, I read a lot, but I read a lot of articles.
Right.
And so, but it's not the same as holding a book in your hand and getting in a hammock, which every time I say hammock, I think of Trinidad and Tobago and a hammock's there. Right. Or in your backyard. Anyway, just find a spot and a good spot to read.
That's right.
Well, talking about women in politics, Bob Bland is going to be calling in. I heard on the news that Trayvon Martin's mother is going to be running for office. And, of course, we all remember when she lost her son. Her name is Sabrina Fulton, yes. Yep. And she's going to be running for office. I thought that was pretty cool, because people who actually have felt pain and understand and experience the loss of a loved one, whether it's gun violence or a drunk driver or whatever it is, I think they're the best advocates for their cause.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
I applaud her.
Most
for,
involved.
Yes,
yeah.
I applaud her for jumping in. And then I heard about all these new roads that they're building in the state of Florida, and I'm like, you know, I have become one of those people that I love the road. I enjoy driving, and I could drive for hours. I went to Miami and back in one day, and I'm so grateful here in the United States, the kind of infrastructure we have, right? And Florida is right up there when it comes to great highways.
Yes.
And I think about
certain cities are not, as you
maybe
know.
Maybe not, but
I always complain
about
that.
We live in a good state. I mean, we have a political issues with our state, but
yeah.
The thing is, you know, when you think about the countries like the Bahamas and Trinidad and third world countries, the roads are not as great.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the issues in Trinidad and Tobago, where I was born and raised, the same pothole that I left when I was 18 years old is still there up to today.
Right.
Because
and driving in Seoul, time. Korea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so the thing is, I always say, you know, like we always talk about, you know, why do people run for office? Mm-hmm. And one of the main things is always, you know, education, healthcare, awareness, infrastructure. We talk about the environmental concerns, women's rights, equality, opportunity, all these things. But you know, when I drive sometime, I'm listening to the radio and I'm thinking about how wonderful it is to be behind the wheel and live in a great country where we do have the freedom of speech
And we all know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, but what do we want at the end of the day? We all want a function in democracy, and we also want to be appreciated and loved.
Right.
Right? That's it. So when we leave this planet, we could say, well, we did our best to leave a footprint behind for the next generation. And I see that our phone lines is lit up, and yes. I think our friend Bob Bland is on the phone calling in from, are you in New York, Bob?
Hi, Sita. So nice to be on the show. I'm in D.C. today.
Oh, you are? Well, good. Well, hey, welcome to, thank you for calling in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We have in studio with us, we have Andrew McDonald, who's an author of a fabulous book that he wrote called Punishment and Good Deeds. His wife, Emily's here, and my co-host, Ellen Little, is here as well. We are so grateful you're taking the time. I know you're busy. So, Bob, we gave a little intro about you and I and how we met and how grateful I was to get the time off to fly to Washington, D.C. with my two daughters and attend the Women's March, because I believe in what you all did, and I feel like many people all over the world want the same things that you fought for, the equality and opportunity for everyone. So tell our listeners a little bit how you got involved with the Women's March.
Yeah, so most people don't know this, but I was a first-time activist when I started organizing the Women's March. I cared about the issues, I voted in every election, but I had never seen my part in the struggle and particularly against the oppression of women. And then the election changed all of that. On November 9th, 2016, I was 8 months pregnant, almost 9 months pregnant at that point, about to have my second daughter. And I woke up after the election and thought, what type of world, what type of country am I leaving for their generation? What type of messes will they have to clean up as a result of us not taking enough action? And so I turned to a group of women that I was already in touch with on social media and said, you know what, we should march on Washington on inauguration weekend. We cannot go silently. And it was incredible the amount of response I got immediately. Thousands of people said that they wanted to join me. And then I was connected with Teresa Shook, who was the grandmother from Hawaii, who also had that same idea. And once we combined forces, it was absolutely incredible.
I think
hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, I think it was like a genie, like, let out of a box, because I know I signed up that very same week and I got a hotel. And I said to my husband, I said, you know what, I believe in this because I have daughters, I have granddaughters, and a lot of us felt we needed something to lift us up, because a lot of people were they were not as satisfied with the results, let me just say that, because, you know, not everyone voted for Hillary Clinton or for President Trump. Some people voted for Gary Johnson, some people didn't, some people just didn't vote at all. And, you know, there was a feeling that people were shocked, and the Women's March lifted so many people's spirits. And what I especially liked about it, so many like-minded women were there. We were standing in the line, my daughters and I, and we had totally forgotten to bring any snacks and water. And all these women were coming up to us and giving us snacks and water. And I bonded with quite a few people on the train. And we remain friends up to today, just like you and I. So I want, you know, how do you get more people to become activists? What do we do? How do we instill that activism in them for a cause that they actually feel close and near and dear to their hearts?
So one thing that people also don't know about the Women's March is that we never stopped organizing after the original march in 2017. And so what I've witnessed over the last 2.5 years is that people notice what is happening in the headlines. So whether it be the school shootings at MSD last year, for a lot of youth, that is when they wake up, when the Muslim ban protests, there are so many things. The horrible situation at our border with families and children being separated from their parents. Every single time that one of these things come up in the media and in the news cycle, this is another opportunity for you to say, you know what, I've had enough. It's time for me to take action.
Yeah, just get involved.
Yeah, just get involved. There's a lot of great organizations not just Women's March, though you can always check us out. We have actions going on all the time. But even looking on your social media, what's going on with the ACLU? What's going on with Move On? Just pick an organization, pick a topic that you feel passionate about, and it's easier than ever to start taking action.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people complain, and they do have a few minutes per day or maybe an hour a week when they can just get involved. You just Google what group you like, whether it's the Plant Society, whether it's United Way, whether it's homelessness, whether it's people, who children in school that don't have lunches. Whatever it is, there's a cause and there's a group you can join and get involved. But I often find people complain a lot, but they don't get involved. And I'm glad that you said that, that, you know, that's one of the ways to get involved. So tell me, what among the people that reached out to you, what were some of their reasons for marching?
It was incredibly varied, and I think that's also reflected in our unity principles and our women's agenda, where while women are an incredibly powerful force, we are not a monolith. We are individuals with lives that are just so widely varied. So many people were marching because they didn't want to lose their reproductive rights. So there were people who were marching because they did not believe that someone who was accused of sexual assault should be in the president's office. There are people, you know, real survivors who have their own stories. There are people who are worried that their disabilities rights are going to be rolled back. There are people who are fighting to make sure that they had inclusive health care, and particularly with the Black maternal death rate up so high, there was a lot of people who were marching not just for healthcare, perception of healthcare with racial and gender justice. So there's so many different reasons, but we thought it was very intergenerational, the march, and the movement afterwards has included everything from the very youngest people people who were marching in the 60s and 70s for civil rights and women's rights and anti-war, because we need to renew this fight every generation. Even when these things get solved, we need to keep on fighting.
Right. And, you know, so Bob, so tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how does it feel for you? You are the recipient of so many awards, including... You were on the Forbes 50 World's Greatest Leaders, Times 100 Most Influential People, Glamour Magazine Woman of the Year. How, I mean, you went from, were you a designer to this, all these fabulous things that are happening to you. How has it changed your life?
Well, I would say, those awards, we really appreciate those awards. That is not why we do this work. We do to affect real change and to improve women's lives. And I also consider every single one of those awards to not be for me, but for every woman who marched across this nation and the world. We earned those awards together.
Well, you guys empowered a lot of women to come back and run for office as well. And I was one of those ladies that ran for office last year. I ran for state representative here in District 52 for the Florida State. And I did believe in what I was running for, too. I did believe in the bottom of my heart that I could make a difference in the lives of so many people.
And the beauty is, Sita, is that you didn't need to win in order to make that happen, because you still do.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. Everybody thinks you have to win in order to make a difference. But I think if you wake up every day and you care about the people and your surroundings, I feel as if I have health insurance when I go to bed at night, I want everybody else to have that same feeling as well. If I have a home, I want people to have a place that they can call home. If my children attend a public school with a teacher that cares about the school and its students, I want every child to have that. And I would like to see people, I want us to be proactive when it comes to crime, not reactive. Like invest in education and awareness or communities, and hold people responsible for the children that they have as well, by empowering them with a job with a great benefit and a wage, a livable wage. And so I fought for those things as well as the environment. And I was so empowered by the ladies and gentlemen that I saw at the march. But I know we have, it's 1:15, we still have some time. So I wanted to ask you, what were you guys hoping would come out of this protest? Because, I mean, there's always hope that if I do this, this is going to happen. What are some of the things that the ladies, you and the three fabulous ladies who organized this march, what were you guys hoping for aside from people running for office and getting involved?
Well, I was one of the national co-chairs along with Tamika Mallory and Linda Sessa and Kevin Kress. I just want to note that we had over 70 national organizers who put together the March on Washington, and they came across all backgrounds. And what we were trying to do with that was not just have it be a moment, but have it ignite an entire new movement of women finding their own power and affecting political change both at the local, state, and national level. And it has had that ripple effect. You mentioned the women's wave, the historic wave into the House of Representatives that we saw this fall. And the Power to the Polls campaign that we did during 2018 enrolled hundreds of thousands of people to vote. And we've seen most of the organizations. So it's not just about women's rights. It's also about indivisible groups. The majority of them are being organized by women. All of these different incredible so-called resistance groups, most of that is women-fueled, and that's what we wanted to see. We wanted women-centered in leadership. We wanted women-centered in issues, and particularly for the discussions to not just be about classic gender equity, like equal pay and reproductive health, but at the intersections for us to deepen the discussion into how does race play a part? How does ability play a part? How does immigration status play a part? How does sexual orientation play a part in our oppressions? And how can we fight not just for ourselves, but for each other?
Well, we give voice to the voiceless. And, you know, people talk to me all the time. I can talk to the wall, and the wall will talk back. But they will say, you know, someone said, well, why, you know, what can we do about immigration reform? And I said, look, it took me 17 years to bring my sister to this country legally. 17 mm-hmm. years. That's a long time. So we do need comprehensive immigration reform. We have children that came to this country when they were 3 months old with their parents. And they were able to go to junior high and high school. And then when you get to college, you can't get in because you don't have your proper paperwork. So we do need immigration. But I think what it takes in our nation right now is the cooler heads. People who are not, you know, people who are willing to sit down and listen and learn from each other. I mean, you all did a fabulous job with people from all walks of life, different races, different class. They came from everywhere, and they had a common goal. And it seems as though we need a march for communication, a march so that people could sit down and say, listen, I might eat kebabs and rice and you're vegetarian, but let's talk. Or I'm Hindu and you're Muslim and you're Christian, but let's talk. Because at the end of the day, no mother wants to carry a baby for 9 months and bring it into this world to suffer. And we're seeing so many people that, you know, they care about life. But I say, you know, we have to care about all life all over the world. Because if you care about a heartbeat in a woman's womb, you should care about the heartbeat that already live and well and cooking and kicking. You know, so I think at some point, you know, we have to say, okay, I agree that we have, you know, issues on both sides. But how about just sitting down and breaking bread together the way it was supposed? Human beings, we need each other to survive. We are a global village. So what do you think? How do we get more people to think the way middle of America think, which is not everybody's far left or far right. There's so many in the middle that do want the same things. How do we get our voices heard that I want to sit down and listen and I want to learn from someone?
Well, that's a great question. And all of the most transformative work that I have found that is being done at the local level. It's being done in your kitchen, in the local coffee shop, in your community group, in your yoga class. These personal relationships that we have with each other are irreplaceable, and we need to make sure that when we're sitting down and talking, that we're not just talking about the weather, that we're talking about these political issues and not shying away from them. I know in America, a lot of times people don't want to talk about things that are unpleasant. But, for instance, I have a cousin in Texas where she and I have very different views on reproductive health and religion and a variety of other things because of our different backgrounds, but we have that personal connection of love with each other, that we care about each other, we care about our relationships, and so we're going to have what is called courageous conversations around this.
I like that. That's a good term, courageous conversation, because love is the force that moves the universe. I mean, this is what I mean, you're right, and I would say to people, well, are you willing to adopt a child? Are you willing to pay more in taxes to help a family who cannot afford a home, feed a child, put health care? If not, I mean, let people decide their own lives. But I do understand we all push for comprehensive sex education at appropriate ages so that people could learn how to take care of their bodies and their families and have children they can afford. It's a conversation. And it's not that you're a Democrat or Republican. You're a human being, just like my grandmother and my aunts and my cousins and my mom. They showed us girls how they suffered having too many children. And so they taught us about birth control. And they taught us about what to do with our bodies. And they taught us how to be grateful for life and the lives you're going to bring into this earth. So I think it's not a bad thing to have a conversation with our family members and our friends about life in general, but at the same time, take it one step further and ask yourself, do you care about life in other lands and other countries, other cultures? And if you do, then we have to have policy to reflect that as well.
That's right. We need consistency, particularly when you're looking at things like foreign policy and the war in Yemen, the concentration camps now in China that where Muslims are being held over a million. The war in Afghanistan, which has gone on for most of our children's their entire lifetime, it's a forever war at this point. All of those things matter, and if we believe that everybody deserves fulfilling and peaceful lives, then we should extend that beyond our borders to our foreign policy and to so many other issues. So that's part of the Women's Agenda, which is our 2019-2020 agenda. You can check it out at womensmarch.com/agenda if you want to see. But it's important for women to not just be organizing, not just having these conversations, but also determining what would that translate into policy? What would that translate into actual laws? Because the reality is this democratic system is run by us. We are the taxpayers. We are the ones who are funding this entire system. So we should determine what policies reflect our values.
Right. And, you know, I'm blessed in that I am one of 18 children. And we have Hindus, Muslims, Christians, and others in our family. But we're able to sit down together from all religions, rich, poor, a couple of crooks, a couple of priests. And we have a built-in system where we take care of each other. We share information, how to open a business, how to protect yourself so you don't have too many children, how to build a home, how to help each other, how to show love, how to clean up the environment. This is what we talk about at family gatherings. We learn from each other. And none of us leave there upset or frightened, fearful, hateful, because we share ideas. And I think there's a reason why I have a voice in the United States, the greatest nation on earth, that I could share that memory and share my feelings, because that's how we were raised, in a country where everybody can talk about what they believe and have the freedom of religion. And I'd like to see that in the United States too, because I don't believe anybody's God is better than anybody, no matter what you call him or her. And so, you know, my whole aim is to reach out and find women like you and people like you all over the world that have the same interest to leave this earth a better place than we found it when we came in. So I really love what you guys are doing. And give us your website one more time, because I know you guys went on and you're doing fabulous things with the Women's March and all the ladies who were there.
Yeah, so you can find out more at womensmarch.com. And I just want to mention for your local audience that we have so many chapters in Florida. Women's March Florida is one of our most active affiliates. So if you just Google Women's March Florida, you'll probably find one near you.
Well, I was endorsed by them for my campaign, and I had extensive conversations with them. But I think if all of us just look in the mirror and look in our hearts, we can see if someone is a hypocrite. We can see if they're saying one thing and doing the other, because we need to live by example. If we want what, you know, they said, do unto your neighbors you would like them to do unto you, right? But the thing is, everybody needs to understand that, you know, we always, my father used to say to us, if you're going to be your brother's keeper in thoughts, words, and action. And so I like that. Although I'm Hindu, I went to Christian schools and I learned a lot. And I found that everyone wanted the same thing at the end of the day. They wanted peace and security, a little food. And I know Ellen would say we wanted faith. And we also talk about forgiveness. And so I'd like to see that translate into policy for people. Nobody wants to shove religion on people's throats. But at the same time, if we are a nation of so many religions and so many people, at some point we need to transcend that into mindfulness and becoming a kinder, gentler nation. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, yes. So I think Ellen is busy on her phone trying to find your website. Well, Bob, it was fabulous having you call in. I can't thank you enough for what you all did, you and all the fabulous volunteers that put this together for all of us to march in Washington, D.C. And my daughters and I left with such wonderful memories. So thank you again. Is there anything else you want to say before you go off here? I think we have maybe a minute.
Well, I would just say that we are having Stop the Ban protests all over the nation. There's over 200 in almost all 50 states tomorrow. So if that's something that speaks to you, you should check out and organize online. If not, there are so many other issues to be organizing around, and it's really easy, again, to be involved. So please, don't just have strong opinions. Don't just talk with a few people and get frustrated. Take action. It feels good. It's a lifestyle. You'll make new friends that you would have never met otherwise, and that empathy that you are talking with about earlier is, you get so much more empathy once you have sat in somebody else's shoes, once you've walked a mile in their shoes, when you're marching, for instance, and realize why their issues are important to you. None of us are free unless all of us are free, and that's why we have to continue to take action to uphold the rights of all people.
Well, you know, I live my life like this. Service to God is service to mankind, and I am grateful to be on earth in human form to be of service.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Bob. And thank you for the listeners for tuning in for the first half of our show. We'll be right back with some more with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these quick messages.
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are having a show behind the show right now. Our conversations on our break, they're really riveting. They're good. We can have another show just about the conversation we're having, but this is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we're here on this awesome planet called Earth with my 55-year-old self. We're having a great show. Ellen Little, my co-host, is here, as usual. Yes. Thank you, Ellen. But
thank
all
you.
That you do for the show and for me, I appreciate
we're
it.
We're having a great time.
And we have our friend, Mr. Andrew McDonald, is here, and his lovely wife, Emily. And the second segment, we're going to devote the second segment to talking to Mr. Andrew about his book. What a handsome guy in the book. It's called Punishment and Good Deeds. Almost sound like you want to start reading it right away. And so, Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well
welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here. And by the way, it was wonderful listening to Bob Bland. I heard a lot of things that I would have liked to have said myself and was quite impressed. So I will be looking into some of that stuff. As far as me, my father was military. So I was raised as a kid running around the world myself, you know, until I was being the youngest, 10 when he retired. So I spent some time overseas as a small child, Taiwan, Germany, etc. Then I came back here to Blessed Florida, where I stayed through college at FIT here locally in Melbourne, Florida, where I studied mathematics, which didn't really prepare me to write a book, but
yeah, I was looking
anyway.
At your
I
bio,
say,
and
yeah,
I was thinking
I said.
Mathematics.
I was trying to make
to
that connection.
The Army, and then he was in Desert Storm,
yeah.
And then now he's answering phones for the police department as a 911. Dispatcher. 911.
Yeah.
You know, you're the kind of guy we want though when we call 911. Because you're calm and you'll be able to walk us through anything, I think. We'll have to have you back on the show to talk about, if you can, to tell us some nice stories without saying names. I would think it's just like nursing where it's HIPAA, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, you got to be careful who you talk about.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know when I told one of my friends you were coming on the show and she had Googled it, she says, ask him for me the first question, why did he pick that name for his book?
The Punishment and Good Deeds?
Yes.
Well, I just basically wanted the idea that here was a normal man who, through the committing what in essence was a good deed, ends up going down a path that he was forced onto that he did not choose for himself, that leads through so much violence and chaos that it upends his entire world. But he did it for a good reason, you know, and just a lot. Too many times I think our world works that way. People with good hearts do what they believe is the right thing, and instead of being rewarded, get punished.
Right.
And sometimes things just happen.
What is that saying? That a man could do 99 good things, but one bad. And everyone forgets the 99 good, but they remember the bad. And you get penalized for it. And it's ruins people's lives. Well, I fell in love with your character, Thomas Mazzucco. And I could just see the scene, you know, the little snippet that they had on Amazon. I read it and I thought, wow, quite interesting. Where, why should anyone read your book?
Well, like I say, basically it is a thriller. It's about a gentleman who ends up in a fight against the mob that he didn't want. All he really wanted was to come home to Florida. He had just retired from the Air Force. He wanted to run a karate studio, pass on his knowledge to young people, and take care of his family and just do what he could. It's not about, you know, trying to save the world from atomic bombs or, you know, nuclear disasters or any of that kind of stuff. It's about normal, everyday people.
Yeah, you sound like a disciplined man. Anybody who wants to teach karate, right, is disciplined, mm-hmm. I would think. Because that's what they say when you put your child in karate classes. They learn a lot of discipline. They learn a lot of teamwork. And that's how he sounded to me, like he wanted to give back to society, and he had a passion for it.
Absolutely. He wanted to help where he could and take care of his own, just like we were discussing a little bit earlier. He had one of his oldest friends that was in the military with him. They kind of had a parting of the ways when he exited the Air Force, because his friend was being recruited by a government agency who wanted him to work with them in an anti-terrorist kind of thing. And his take on this, what he told his friend Jimmy, was you can't fight terror by becoming a terrorist.
That's something that's powerful. We should write that down.
You know, you just can't. So if you're going to use the same type of things against them that you're fighting against, you have become them.
Powerful.
So he advised him not to do it.
So why write? Why did you become a writer?
Well, I've been reading since I was four. My mother.
Let me guess. The Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew. No.
lots of that.
Yeah.
You know, I went from Paddington Bear through the Hardy Boys.
And yeah, there you go.
You know, we all read those Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys. It's almost like it was the good old days.
Yep.
When you could borrow a book from a friend, and those books were passed on from one person to the other. Now that I'm a nurse, I always say, I wonder if you swabbed the covers of those books, what you would find.
Yeah. Well, they do say there's a lot of bacteria on it, yeah. So you might want to wear sanitary gloves.
Yeah.
But as far as it goes, I've been reading my entire life. But it started when I was I went to the first and second grade in Taipei, Taiwan, when my father was stationed there for 2 years. So while we were there, I actually contracted a rather rare disease in my feet called a Kohler's disease. Don't ask me how to spell it. I wouldn't remember. But during that 2 years, in essence, I was a cripple. And books almost became my life at that point. And they've stayed with me. I can't remember a time in my life that I ever walked out of a door without a book in my hand. Now, of course, I can.
I see Emily is ready to jump in here. Look at her. Her face is lit up. For all listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're having a very fun, unscripted, quite informative segment with our friend here, Mr. Andrew McDonald. And he brought his lovely wife, Emily, and I think she's going to jump in and tell us about his admission that he does not leave the home without a book in his hand.
No, he does not. I mean, if we're in the vehicle or whatever, before we even pull out of driving, if there's not a book in his hand, and he's like, honey, can you go back and grab my book? Or his phone, because he's real bad about leaving his phone, because he's got the Kindle on his phone, so either the Kindle on the phone or his book, in one way or the other, he has to have something to read.
Well, he doesn't want to have an idle mind.
No.
Because, you know, sometimes, you know,
learn from books.
Right. Yeah.
And even the way that people write, right? I mean, the quality of the way people write, or the
style.
Way that people put their style on the whole
thing. It's not just in the writing, it's also you learn from what you're reading. I mean,
yeah.
You understand the different cultures, the different meanings, the different.
It takes you away.
Yes.
I read a book that was, I think, was written in Spain. My friend, I was in a book club, and I tell you, every time I think about being in a book club and how many books we were influenced by, from the Renaissance to Spain, London, we read series that were written in Africa, and you learn about different cultures differently. You don't need a passport. Your passport are your books.
Yep.
right?
Exactly.
Every book practically contains its own universe. But the main thing here, you know, you can sit in front of a TV or listen to the radio, such as this. But when you pick up a book, you can see the insides of these people's minds. You can envision what they're thinking because it's there in black and white. TV, you can't do that. You see what the producer puts on the set. You see the actions that people take. You hear the words, but you don't feel them. You don't get that immersion and you truly exercise your imagination in the same way.
Yeah, when we were kids, they used to say imagine as you read, right? So let's talk about your main character, Thomas Mazzucco. When was he born? Who decided his character, how he was going to look? Who did Emily help you? Because he's pretty handsome, you know. And the thing is, it's almost like you've been developing Thomas for a while in your mind. Where did you get that inspiration from?
I guess if I had to point at one particular individual, it probably would have pointed back at my father, I guess. Because he was a soldier in Vietnam, although at the time he was a legal clerk. But he was that type of determined individual, you know, who's, if he walked in the room, everybody felt it immediately. There was just no way around it. You knew he was there.
Commanding presence.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my dad was like that.
Yeah.
And he was without saying a word.
Was he tall? Yeah, was your dad?
He was.
Yeah, why is it that tall people always get that respect, huh?
Without saying a word.
Tell that to Napoleon.
Yeah.
It's not even, as soon as he entered the room, everybody looked, everybody knew he was there. His presence was there.
Yeah, I think Ellen is pretty tall. And when she walks into a room, people do want to know who you are. I did. I mean, that's how we met.
That's right.
Yeah,
we met. Yeah, with heels on. You know, even low heels, I'm like 6 foot one. So, yeah, I'm pretty tall.
Yeah.
I'm pretty tall.
So, Andrew, where do you do most of your writing? Like, some people find quiet spots in the home. They have a certain area they go. We had Yvonne Mason on, another author, and she was telling us, like, she'll write anywhere, like, mm-hmm. at the drop of a hat. Where's your secret spot?
Well, I would hate to say that it's between the hours of, like, 4 o'clock and 6:30 in the morning at work, but... but, no, I do have a separate library in my house with its own little quiet space. The dogs and the cats don't come in, and the kids better stay out. So I have just its own little round table, and I can sit in there with my laptop and relax, or on the weekends just at my dining room table because I get up very early, you know, and just try to find a quiet spot. But as far as your friends write, if you're a writer, you write. And it doesn't merely matter where you are to a point. If you don't have a notebook, you've got a phone.
Yeah.
You'll find yourself jotting down notes anywhere and everywhere.
That's when I wrote my book. That's how I was, in the car, at the traffic lights. Sometimes I'm cooking and I get a little idea and I want to write it down quickly.
Oh yeah.
And then you have to consolidate all these pages and words into one page. It was a lot. But I just want our listeners, again, we're speaking with Andrew McDonald, and there's a C in the middle in case you want to Google it. And the book is called Punishment and Good Deeds. And we're learning all about the main character that he wrote about. And his name is Thomas Mazzucco. So why do you believe in Thomas? What was it about Thomas Mazzucco, your main character, that made you say that I believe in his story?
What I wanted was basically a gentleman who's had the down-to-earth family values. You know, He wanted to take care of his family, his friends, his own life, and help those he could around him. But he's also a very determined individual, strong-willed, and when the world pushes, he pushes back.
Thomas, don't take crap from anybody.
Right.
No, you see a lot of Thomas not taking crap from anybody in the book.
I wonder who could play Thomas in a movie. I almost feel like this book should be a movie.
So do I.
Yeah.
So do I.
Well, I'm thinking we'll have to come up with a character an actor by the end of the session,
show. Okay.
The show.
But you also see one thing, though, that some people would find, I guess, maybe surprising, almost close to the middle of the book, because you might say he makes a deal with the devil. Because things were going off the rails, shall we say, And because of the situation he found himself in, even though he didn't want it in the first place, people were getting hurt, family and friends were getting hurt. So in essence, he made a deal with the devil that would put himself in a bad situation in order to remove from that situation the other people that were getting hurt. However, when that deal falls through after much heartache, that's when the war really starts.
Yes. And some I read online that somebody said that they couldn't put it down. They read the 400 pages straight. They just liked it so much. So who is your target audience for this book?
I wouldn't necessarily give it to younger people. There's a lot of violence and there's
some love scenes, I heard, and some sexual scenes. Well, there's nothing bad with that if your audience is the right audience.
There is some romance. There's one sex scene. It's not really in depth, but there is at least one. So it's for adults and for people who like thrillers, but it's for people who want a character that they can personally identify, that they could see living next door to them. You know, it's not Jack Ryan. It's a lot closer to somebody similar maybe to Lee Child's version of Jack Reacher.
Right.
Except that this guy's got family, friends, connections.
Emily, I can see this guy writing another book about the calls that he takes on 911. That's in the works. Because, you know, we all sit by and sometimes you'll hear somebody call 911 because their burger was too cold or Pizza Hut didn't show up on time. Look, he's making a sign of the cross. Or they'll call for silly things.
Of course
things.
It happens.
Yeah, of course it happens, right?
Oh, trust me, it happens.
Oh, yeah. And so the thing is, I mean, if you know you had the vision to write this book, and I'm so appreciative of the fact that you took the time to come. And I just want to know, if somebody wants to locate the book, where is it available?
Okay. If you're going online, you can get it through Barnes & Noble. You can get it through Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle and paperback at both those places. You can also go to the Google Play?
Yes.
iPlay?
Yeah, nowadays. So what was the most difficult part about writing this book? What were some of the challenges you faced?
Well, part of that is simply those crazy nights when you've got everything running through your head that you have to just jump up because you can't possibly sleep and jot something down. But scripting it, believe it or not, I wrote this book twice. I wrote a much shorter version of it. I took it to a friend whose opinion I trusted, and she said, gee, I've seen worse things published. And she told me that there wasn't enough backstory and enough characters and enough depth. At that point, the book was maybe 200 pages. This was a few years ago. I went home, I sat down, and I picked up my laptop, pen, pencil, and everything else in hand, and I started rewriting. And the book is 500 pages long. It has tons of backstory where you can, even the bad guys, you know where they came from, you know how they got where they're at, you know who they are. You might not like them. But you know, have some understanding.
You can understand the direction and why they went that way.
So, Emily, when he develops his characters, does he know from the beginning how these characters are going to be developed, or does he develop the characters as he goes along?
He develops it as he goes along. He does not know what...
Does he bounce it off you and say,
yes.
He does?
Yes, he does. He's writing a new book right now, so yeah, he's bounced a lot.
Well, and I don't know if you know this about Andrew, but there he has 5 books that are published, actually. This one, the Punishment and Good Deeds, is through Pace Publishing, you said?
Page.
Yeah. Page Publishing. But the other ones he has are on Amazon. So he's got, what, 3 children's books?
Yes.
Yeah, there's...
Singular Echo, Ring of Nature, and Flower Power.
Wow.
Yeah, the Singular Echo. Echo was a acronym for Earth Cloned Human Organism. That's a young teen fantasy sci-fi kind of thing. The other two are, I think, of almost like ABC after school specials. They're lesson books for children.
Yeah. Right. And then you have a poetic book, right? A room.
Yes.
You got yourself a romantic man here, Emily.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, who is your favorite author? Do you have a favorite author?
That's kind of a tough question.
Our house is a library.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
I have thousands of books. Around the house.
So you don't have a favorite, but what is your favorite type of reading? I would imagine it's thrillers, but now I'm finding out you write poetry too.
good poetry.
Yeah, I write a lot of poetry. If I had to pick an absolute favorite, it'd probably be a toss-up somewhere between Dean Koontz and Stephen King.
I knew he was going to say Dean Koontz. I don't know why, but I thought he would. And of course, all authors have fans. What does your fans mean to you? Because you have quite a few. I Googled your name this morning, and I read up a few things. I'm like, he's got a lot of people out there that like what you write.
I've been seeing some of that. I still think of myself as an unknown author. But every time I see somebody post on somewhere, you know, hey, you know, your book was great. You know, I truly enjoyed it. You know, it lifts my heart. And that's what I want to do. What I want to do is reach out and give to people out there something that they can pick up. They can escape from their everyday problems into another world and hopefully learn something along the way and just be uplifted for a little while. Or just simply enjoy an adventure.
Right. I'm sure our listeners are probably trying to figure out who we're speaking with. And we're speaking with Andrew McDonald, and his book is called Punishment and Good Deeds. Ellen will put all of that on our website and how to get all his other books. But I wanted to ask you, did you ever have alternate endings that were considered for your books? Or was the ending, as you developed your characters, you went along and you had the ending? Did you have to change it up a little bit sometimes?
I'm not really a big outline guy. To be honest, yeah, I subscribe a lot more to the Dean Koontz philosophy than Stephen King when it comes to writing. Because when Dean Koontz was asked, how do you become a writer? He said, yeah, pick up a pen.
Yep, there you go.
Yes.
Whereas Stephen King was like, you know, you take classes for this and that and the other thing. And that's great. And if you can, fantastic. And absolutely that they're helpful. But my personal opinion is you pick up a pen, you picture a scene, and you start writing.
That's how I look at it, too. So it's writing. Some people say writing, they ask, is it a gift or is it a curse?
Yes.
It's both.
It is.
Emily, I feel sorry for you because, you know, here we have the house full of books. Got this guy walking around the house with characters in his mind. But you know what? What a wonderful life, though, because you both enjoy it.
Yes, I do.
And what about, I mean, do you remember any time in your life when he was not writing?
No, I don't.
Do you remember the first book? Like how he got the inspiration for his first book?
The first one was, I don't remember the inspiration, but the first book he ever decided to write was Punishment and Good Deeds. The other ones were in between the other ones that he has on the Amazon site. I think one of the children's books was because one of our sons had to have a book for a school project, and the story came into his head, and he wrote it.
Oh, my God. Andrew, did you ever have to leave someone out of the final draft? Like, there was a character all along. You developed this person. You nurtured him. You fed him. You watched him grow. And then you said, I'm going to have to kill him off the book.
Yeah, that definitely does happen.
That's so sad, doesn't it?
As a matter of fact, like she was saying, I'm actually writing a second thriller now that I'm probably about three quarters of the way through. It's called Killing Keys. And I had envisioned my main character as this young gentleman about 19 years of age. He works in his uncle's locksmith shop, and he valets on the weekends. And this kind of develops into a burglary scheme, which was not the best way for it to go. However, he gets caught up. He gets caught up with a sociopathic killer that he didn't know about was that way. But he was to be the main character. He really was. And I had envisioned him all the way through, and here I find myself. About 60-70% of the way through the book, all of a sudden he's languishing off on the sidelines, and his friends are picking up the gauntlet, and they're running full tilt to save him. He almost became a side character, and yet he was the main character of the book.
Oh man, yeah. I'd feel sorry for him.
So how do you market your books? How are you getting that? You said that you feel like you're an unknown author, and don't you have a book signing coming up?
I do, as a matter of fact. The Barnes & Noble at 1955 West New Haven, right across from the Melbourne Square Mall on 192.
Excellent.
That'll be on Saturday, June 8th from 1 to 3.
So we'll put that on our website.
As far as marketing, though, nowadays, marketing is everything. But like everything else, it takes money to make money, and personally, I don't have a lot. So I'm all over. I try to be all over Facebook and make all the friends I can there and post stuff and join all kinds of groups. As a matter of fact, I just recently joined the Space Coast Writers Guild here locally, which I ran into an old and dear friend of mine at the very first meeting I went to, which was quite pleasurable. I'm on Twitter now with 1,600 or so followers, but some of them have 5,000 and 10,000 followers.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, the online presence is just, but it takes, I think you have to spend more time marketing than you can writing.
Well, isn't that really the truth? They say that marketing the book is more difficult than actually writing the book.
It is.
Quite challenging, right?
Absolutely.
So, Emily, I have a question for you. How much time do we have, Paul? We have a few more minutes, I hope.
Got 3 minutes.
Okay. So tell me, what about his writing process? When does he get into this brainstorm? When does he get into these ideas?
Anywhere.
So I suppose you have to keep a pad and paper in the car when you're driving, because he'll tell you to write something down.
Yes, he has. There are times, times he's like, honey, put this down. I'm like, I don't have paper, but he said, just type it on your phone. Because he doesn't want to forget that he got this idea in his head. So yes, there's times if we're out somewhere, he's like, honey, put that down, write it down real quick. Or I write it on the back of a receipt or an envelope or something that I have in my purse, because something just comes into his head. And if he's afraid, if he doesn't put it down, he's going to end up forgetting what he wants.
Well, it's the truth, though. If you don't write it down right away when you have the idea, you will not remember that idea again.
Nope.
You know? So did we ask you how you came up with the idea for Punishment and Good Deeds, the name? Because, I mean, the name is fabulous. And this is what's happening right now in our nation, Punishment and Good Deeds.
Yeah, we kind of started there. But, yeah, the whole thing was simply that. The idea came from the old saying that no good deed goes unpunished.
Right. We talked.
And there is at least a modicum of truth to that. So I just wanted to show how somebody trying to do the right thing can end up going so wrong.
Yeah.
Not always.
So there's a lesson to be learned here.
Absolutely.
Right. And so what's next for you? What's next? You're writing another book. You have a very good assistant, wife, best friend, Emily. You know, everybody should have a marriage like this, because I like politics. I like social issues. I love working. I don't know why I don't stay home. I just enjoy it. And my husband likes gardening. He's retired now. He's a bit boring, but he's a good man. I'll keep him. But I like this. You know, you two seem to have found, you know, something that you have in common, which is his writing, and you enjoy his characters, and you watch the challenges he faces as he writes, which is wonderful.
Well, we've been married since November of 1985. So,
another book about longevity marriage.
34 years in November.
Yep.
34 years.
Congratulations.
So what's next in store for you is another book and another year of marriage and more writing. We love you guys. You know, I love when people come on the show. When they leave, I feel as though we're helping you to get the book out, to get the name out, to market the book. And I'm sure Ellen would put it on
our
website.
Yep.
And, of course, with Bob calling in, and she has a lot of followers as well. I mean, that's what this is all about. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends has always been a community show to help people in the community, to showcase to our listeners and people what they're doing to uplift their lives and the lives of so many people. And your book sounds fabulous. And the lesson to be learned is, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. I love it.
That's awesome. Well, once again, another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here from sunny Cocoa, Florida. Thank you to all of our sponsors, to all of our listeners who keep downloading, who keep supporting the show. And we will be back next week live at 1 p.m., just like we are every Monday. Right.
Hospice of St. Francis is coming on next week, and we'll be having a great conversation.
Make sure you get out to the book signing on June 8th from 1 to 3 at Barnes & Noble, and we've posted that for Andrew. We'll see you next week, folks.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, Merritt Island, FM 94.7.